My name's James, I'm an addict.
Thanks, everybody. He stole my opening jokes there, so he has. My name isn't Frank, my name's James, and I'm an addict. My nerves have been... Oops. I'm a wee bit weirder than him. Smaller, for some reason. When people were getting me and Frank mistaken for one another, I would stay away. We use the Glasgow joke that he's got more money than me, and that's a fact. So, my name is James, I'm an addict. I got asked to about coming to this last year, and then it obviously got cancelled because of COVID and postponed. And then I'm doing with some of my friends who've stayed, and I really appreciate that. Some of them have left. I'll take that, I'll write that down and take that to my sponsor as well, but because that's what we're meant to do. So I'm thinking, I watched some of the bigger shares in here, big crowds, and my nerves were, and I'm thinking, what have I got to share after watching some of that? Because I've still got a wee bit of, that wee bit of low James that kind of surfaces every now and again. And then when everybody was leaving this morning, I'm thinking, fuck, man, they're all just fucking off. And I'm not going to listen to James, you know what I mean? Because I don't know. But I do know. So I'll just check my watch. I'm really nervous. All I've done today is sit down at the front and run in and out of the toilet. And I missed a couple of good meetings as well, and I'm really sorry for that. So I first got to a fellowship in 2001. It was another fellowship. I first got to Cocaine Anonymous in 2007-ish, but my clean date is the 13th of March 2018. So I didn't get it for a long time. I got to the other fellowship, and at the time, and I'm not up here waving a book either. When I got to the other fellowship, I went in 2001. It was a keep it simple thing, and if you don't lift the first drink, and that's what I done, And for that day to this, I've not lifted a drink, so I've heard something. My life changed in 2001. I got to loads of meetings and I hung about with different people and my life was good. I went back and done a bit of studying. I got a good job. I was a drug dealer before, I got a good job. I got a better job. And then life can ruin. And something happened in my family and I didn't have any coping stuff because I didn't have a program. Not only did I know of a program, I didn't really know what I suffered for at that point either. I thought, James drinks, he gets into trouble. And that's the way it'd been all through my drinking life since I started drinking when I was about 15 or 16. So I didn't know any of that. I didn't know what I suffered for until I got back in here in 2018. When I came... In 2007, at Cocaine Anonymous, there was probably a handful of meetings in Glasgow at the time, and I remember going to the meetings and hearing the people who started CA probably in Scotland, and they were speaking, and I knew they were speaking this stuff, and it was magic. I could hear it. I knew there was a message in there, but I had one eye on running away. Because I was always running away. Ran away to Jersey when I was 19 and I had, Jersey was all right, but I ended up in prison in Jersey, drink-related stuff. Came back to Jersey when I was 21, 1987, ended up in prison. Ended up in prison a couple of times in the 80s. So that was me, I always, for my first drink, I'm not one of these ones that's going to tell you I felt different and what have you, but I had a drink when I was 15. I was on holiday. I remember acting the clown, which I'd done all through my drinking career. Then I was drunk and I was sick. I was crying for my dad, who had died when I was a wee boy. And then when I woke up the next morning, I was riddled with fear. I had a knot in my stomach that just followed me all through my drinking, and I didn't know what any of that was. I was with my auntie and uncle on holiday in Malta, and I could hear them talking in the living room, and I was petrified. You know, I just didn't want to go up, and I just didn't want to face them, you know, because I could remember stuff, and I had that horrible, had been sick feeling about me. And when I got up, my auntie says to me, she's a lovely woman, she always looked after me, even when things get mad, I know she was always the one that I used to be able to go to, my ma's sister. And she says to me, were you taking anything else last night? And, you know, I was like, no, absolutely no, I wasn't. And she says, be careful with that drink, because it doesn't agree with you. And I didn't know at the time that there was alcoholism in my family, you know, on my dad's side, and it's fucking Scotland, isn't it? You know, it's Glasgow, it's working class places, and it's, I don't want to go into the poverty stuff and all that, but that's, you know, that's what people done, and they drank. And I went home, and I went home with the fear, back to Scotland with the fear, because what was my ma going to say? My ma was trying to bring me and my brother up herself, and she did, you know, but she never. My dad died in 1985, and my ma died just before COVID. So my mammy's not been dead for 2 years yet. But for 1975, when my dad died when I was 10, my ma never so much as went out with another guy or anything like that. Just your old school wee woman, looking after her two boys who had all this stuff going on that I didn't know about, you know what I mean? I don't believe that I'm an addict and an alcoholic because any of that, but the spiritual thing, that's that malady, that's where that comes from with me, you know what I mean? I know what I know the day, but I want to know more. But I also know what I do the day, so as I don't lift a drink or a drug. And I didn't lift drink again, you know, I was 15, I was scunnered by it. I want to feel like that again. So I didn't, and then a couple of years later, I had left school, I'm hanging about with these other boys in the streets, it's 1981, and I started drinking, you know, and when I started drinking then, when I was 16, hanging about with a wee gang, in Castlemoke, I don't know if any of you know Castlemoke in Glasgow, but it's pretty rough, you know, and we're all hanging about in gangs, and it was just before heroin kind of came and destroyed the city as well, but then I started to get the feeling where I wasn't this wee, you know, because I've always been wee. I was never big and then get weird, you know, and I've always been overweight, and I'd hair right that fucking was perfect on one side and curled right up on the other side, and you know, I used to lie on that side to flatten my hair down, and you know, all that stuff that you would never tell anybody that, you know what I mean, and being able to stand up here and tell you it's, but that's the way it was, you know. Never happy. My ma didn't have much. Her sister had two boys who were, one was a couple of years older than me, and my bigger cousin was a few years older than me, but they were fucking giants, you know, and when I got haunted doing their stuff, I was having to turn up my trousers away back then as well, but it was haunting me doings with half my bigger cousins, and you know, and that's just the way it was. And see anybody my age who's in here tonight, probably, that's probably your experience as well, man, because we were poor, but we didn't know we were poor because everybody else was the same. And then I started to get into trouble with the police. I was always feared of the police. Into trouble with the police. And I remember again, you know, because every time I drank after this, I got the bravado. But after the bravado, I cried, I was always sick, and I was always felt the same way, you know what I mean? It was never, you know, I never enjoyed it. I never enjoyed the taste of it. I didn't enjoy what it done to me. I didn't enjoy what I'd done when it done that to me, but I could never think, you know, stop doing that. And any time I got into trouble, people would say, you're a bit mental when you drink, you know, and I was a bit mental when I drank, and that's a fact, but so as I got older, then that pattern kind of continued. And right up until I stopped drinking, you know what I mean? I probably, you know, it's just got a wee flash here, probably right up until 2018 when I started to do the work in here, I thought drink was a problem. I didn't know that it wasn't a problem at all, you know what I mean? It was just drink brought the problem out in me, I think. So that's the way my life went. Went to Jersey to get away from the police, to get away from smack, because I'd had a wee dabble in that, and it wasn't really my drug, and it was a kind of, I wasn't wanting to get into that. So that's the thing as well, you know, it's not the drug that gets you hooked into it, no, you know, because I took heroin for some time, and I was able to walk away from it when I walked away from it, you know, so it wasn't, that wasn't my drug, and it wasn't the thing that got me addicted, it wasn't the thing that made me an addict, because it's no the drink or the drugs or the coke or the food, in my case, still the day at some point, you know what I mean? It's just that wee underlying inner condition. I went to Jersey, no known that what I thought I was running away from, I was going to take with me, because it was me I was running away from. I'm running away from the border in Glasgow. Next time I'm in Jersey, and it was full of Manx and Scousers, and at that time in the 80s as well, and it was magic, you know what I mean? But I was drinking, and then I was getting into trouble, and the police in Jersey after a month knew me by name, and then that's when I started going like, I'm going to try and stop drinking. And then I would stop for a week, or I would stop for 2 weeks. And then I would think, look, it wasn't that bad. I'm not going to go back to that fucking Great Union, man, because they're all assholes in there. I'm going to go to that other place. Sorry, I swear as well, man. And I just apologise for that just now, because I'll swear all the way through this. It's my nerves as well. And I would stop, but then I would forget, you know what I mean? And you know, it's not just forgetting, it's just I didn't know. I didn't know anything about the illness that I found out that I suffered from when I eventually got in here in 2018. And every time I woke up after doing something and I would attack big guys, I would smash things up, pubs up, put shop windows in, just a lot of shite stuff, you know what I mean? And then I'd be like, right, that drink stopped that. And every time I stopped it, you know, I didn't even know that I couldn't stay stopped. I thought I was deciding. I was just, you weren't that bad. I came back and met a lassie. So I'm 21 now. I met a lassie. It was my first relationship. I thought I was in love, and I probably was, but love's no what I thought it was back then either. And everything was fine for 6 months. She went on holiday. And when she was away on holiday, all this stuff that I didn't know I had, all that jealousy, insecurity, all the control stuff, all came out, man. And when she came back, I demanded she come and see me. And the end up, the long and the short of it is, without getting into it, I ended up in prison. The prison in Jersey was near the prison I ended up in Glasgow. You know, the one in Glasgow was proper, real. And I ended up in that through a domestic violence thing. I'm not proud of the day, but I've made my amends, and that lassie's my pal today, you know, and that's the power of this stuff as well. So I'm in prison, and I managed to get out on bail. Swearing, man, I'm not going back to that, you know what I mean? But no recognising the control stuff or the jealousy stuff or any of the violence that came on the back of that. No, I was a monster. The monster was simmering away, and when I drank, the monster just kind of exploded out. I'm thinking she'll get back with me, and she didn't anyway. Thankfully, you know, the lassie dodged a bullet, but there was relationship after relationship. I'm not going into them all, but relationship after relationship where I fucking just exhibited all the same behaviours, and then I would be sorry, smashed up, full hussies. And always blaming it on the drink, and no knowing that, you know, there's something going on me, James, and it's not the drink, you know, the drink's the thing that brings it out. And then after a while, I didn't have to be drunk for to be then smashing up and doing all this stuff. Moving into the 90s, and still no knowing what I suffer for, you know. I'm not drinking and I'm using other stuff, and then I started selling drugs, and my life is outwardly, it's fantastic, you know. I've got money, I've always got people running about me, but when, you know, people would be able to go out on a Friday night and be raving, and maybe just run into the Saturday, and on the Tuesday I would be going back to wherever I was staying at the time. And I always smashed up, you know, I always lifted my horns. I had fucking wains living in fear. And that was the way it was. And then I would stop drinking. So it was just a thing, and I just didn't know. I didn't know I suffer for this thing. I didn't know it was an obsession in my mind, you know. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know that once I started, I triggered this physical allergy. Ecstasy was fantastic, you know. I loved that. Ecstasy was brilliant. I would drink, but and do the same stuff. And then in the mid-90s, somebody gave me a shot of a pipe. And then that was it, you know. The pipe came. And from 90 until 2000, my life was just... It was a horrible, horrible existence when I look at it. Just robbing Peter to pay Paul to pay for this stuff. You know, and right through the word go with that stuff, I never ever enjoyed it, same as I never ever enjoyed drinking. You know, so I was doing something that made me feel absolutely horrible, but I just couldn't stop doing it because it was making me feel better than the actual horrible that I didn't know that I was suffering for. And in 2001, I'd done something anyway. 2000, in fact, the last time I was going to share this as well, so last time I was in Blackpool was 2000 for a stag do, and I had been working with my brother. He was away on holiday. I had the phone and his car keys, and when he came back, I was down here, and he went and got my keys for my flat off my mum to get in and get his phone and get his car keys, and we went in. The bicarb and all the stuff was all out, man, and it obviously hadn't cleaned up my mess before I came down here. And he phoned me saying he was going to kill me because I was hiding it, you know. They all thought I was a Charlie bandit, but they didn't know what I was doing. And I stopped, you know, and then I was like, right, okay, I promise you'll never touch that stuff again. 2000, I've not touched that stuff. 2001, I got into trouble, got to the other fellowship. Stop drinking, life is fantastic. Wind it on, I've got a good job. I was an addiction worker, because that's what happens, isn't it? You know, you get a wee bit better and you go into social services, and I was looked after unaccommodated kids. And I heard one of the shares saying yesterday about, you know, the kind of, they were sober, but their life was fucking absolute hell. Mine's wasn't it? You know, I was drinking drugs free. My life was fantastic. Had the lassie back in my life, had the car, had the watch, had all the stuff. In 2004, my brother was murdered, and boom, resentment that I didn't know anything about. You know, it took me, he was murdered in 2004, took me until 2018 to be showed any of this stuff. I didn't know about resentment. I didn't know that because of the resentments I had about what happened to him, that I was harming all these other people in my life. My sexual conduct went off the wall and I was just driven by fear. You know, all the things in a step four inventory, and I didn't know any of that. Before you know it, I'm back smoking dope, I'm back sniffing the stuff, and then I'm back on the pipe. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know. I thought I was making wee decisions, I thought I was making my own choices, but I didn't know that I was powerless. You know, I'd go to that other fellowship and I saw powerless and you know, but I didn't know what that meant. And it wasn't until I got here in 2018 that I found out what that meant. So my life then is in total chaos. 2004, he dies. 2005, I start. By 2008, I'm in India. I'm back on the pipe out there and I'm not coming back. And then 2009, I'm arrested. Spend 4 years out there in trouble. The boys have asked me not to go into the India stuff, so I'm not going to bother, but I was in prison in India for some time. I came back here in 2013. See, when I was in jail in India, my mammy came to see me. This is powerless, right? And I'll just took one wee India story. My mammy's came to see me and she's brought my son, who was 11. My ma was a wee, I don't know, she was maybe about 70, I suppose, at the time. They've came to visit me, and he's broke his heart, she's breaking her heart, and I'm slipping in my phone number to phone a guy who's going to meet them and get them a parcel for them to bring back into me. And that's, you know, because all I could think of was, they'll fucking bring that in because they would do anything for me, because they would. My ma would have done anything for me. And my ma and my boy brought a parcel back into an Indian nick for me. And at the time, I thought that was magic. I thought they were my heroes. And I didn't know the harm I was doing. I didn't fucking care about the harm I was doing is the actual truth. When I came back in 2013, I tried to get my boy back into my life because I didn't know. I'm thinking, you were a shite da, be his pal, you know, and by being his pal, before you know it, we're using together. He's only 16 and he's 17, we're selling together. And it's just fucking ridiculous. It was just a horrible, horrible existence again. 2018, his mental health took a dip. He was using loads of different substances. At that point, I was in one of my periods where I was stoked. You know, I was in one of my periods where I'd stopped using, and I was clean, and I thought, I'll take you to a meeting, I'll phone so-and-so, and I'll take you to one of them CA meetings, that'll be the very thing for you. And I phoned a couple of guys in Glasgow, that Jerry and Dino, some of you maybe know them, if you know the Glasgow thing, and I took my boy to a meeting, and then we sat in the meeting, and I think I'm taking him because he'll get sorted when he goes there. And when the chair broke down the first step, about control and choice, about the obsession and the compulsion, I was like, fucking bingo, man, that's what's the matter with you. You know, that's how you can stope, but you can't stay stoped. And that's how, when you start again, you lose control. And my ears picked up, you know, because I was like, ah, wow, man, I wonder if that is me, you know. I'm going to, suggestions were, you know, keep coming back and get a sponsor and get through the work and stuff like that. And then the shared. And for the first time, I don't know what's happened to any of the other meetings that I went to, and I went to plenty. She broke down the steps, and she broke them down very, very simply, very basic. I broke them down, finding out what the problem is, finding out what the solution is, and then the action you've got to put in. So I got that meeting, man. I left it, and I was like, fucking hell, man. And do you know, if there's anybody in here struggling tonight, or anybody new, or anybody just coming back, or anything, man, you know, I'm aiming this at yous here. Keep coming back. Find out what you suffer for, because I didn't know for. Got to the other place in 2001, and it took me until 2018 before I discovered what was the matter with me. I discovered what I wasn't, and then I started to discover what I was. And I joined that group straight away, and I just wanted to learn. I got to as many meetings as I could. I done what I was told in that respect. And then when I sat down, I asked the guy to sponsor me. And we sat down and we started for the very start of the book. The preface, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and how it all came about. And here was two guys, so I would have been 53, I'm almost 57, so I would have been 53 at the time, and he's the same age as me. We're sitting in a house in Glasgow, talking about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's 8 years old or whatever it was. And all the wee stuff all started to fall into place. And that's before we even looked at the doctor's opinion. I knew there's fucking magic in that book, man, because I'm into magic. There's magic in that book. When we started looking at the doctor's opinion, you know, see, it just to kind of find out, just explain my behaviours, you know. It explained so a compulsion to me wasn't what I actually found out a compulsion was, you know what I mean? And to find out that all them decisions I made, you know, so when I'm on the crack, My first smoking a pipe, I went right into psychosis every single time, right? So I know that when I do that, here's how I'm going to feel. And I also know that when I do that and I feel that way, that I'm seeing things and I'm hearing things and I'm fucking petrified for my life. My best thinking is, have another one and you might feel a wee bit better, right? And I couldn't get that, you know what I mean? I couldn't, and I'll lie down in the dark. Just all the stuff that you've heard, you know, you've heard all that stuff. I don't need to go into any of that. But when he broke down that doctor's opinion to me, I'm thinking, you know, I wasn't, you know what I mean? There was stuff in there that I didn't know. I didn't know anything about any of it. So it was a revelation, you know, and I hear that I'm sharing all the time, and I think it's dead important. I would never get better until I found out what I actually suffered for, you know. You need to find out what the problem is before you can find out what the solution is to help you get better. So I found out what the problem was. I suffer for this obsession in my mind where I can't make the right choice, you know, and it's when I make that wrong choice, whatever happens, I'll lift a drug. This physical compulsion kind of kicks in. An allergy, whatever you want to call it, you know what I mean? And then it's just, I'm like, oh, fucking hell, man. So, you know, what do I need to do to stop that happening? Because that's what we're here for, isn't it? That's what the book's about, you know? What is it we do? Once you find out what's the matter with you, what is it you're going to do to help you get better? And so when I found out I was powerless, fucking powerless, I'm not powerless, I'm for Castlemilk, you know what I mean? And finding out, no, you actually are powerless because all them choices you think you're making, you're not making, you know what I mean? That's an obsession in your mind. And here's why it is, as I went through the stuff. You know, believing there's a power greater than me, I'd never bother. I'd spent 4 or 5 years in India reading about Buddha, reading about the universe, reading about all the Eckhart Tolle, all the spiritual stuff. So I got all that, you know what I mean? I totally understood it all. You know, and I could have entered into debate with you about all that stuff. But I still didn't know what I suffered for then. So it doesn't matter if you know all that stuff. If you don't know what you suffer for, all that stuff doesn't fucking matter. That's what I was to find anyway. And I heard somebody sharing last night as well about making the decision. And when we done the step 3 prayer, that's when I got my first spiritual experience. Me and him standing in his living room, 253-year-old Glasgow addicts in recovery by this point, standing and hugging. And I could not stop the tears, man. And I was crying and it was coming for air. And it was because I knew that I didn't have to use again. I knew that I was going to be all right. And at this point, because you've looked up and you've looked ahead of yourself, you know, you look, oh, that's what I've got today. I've got to go through that stuff. And I've got the big on all about the step 4. Went to his house first thing on a Saturday morning. He made me my breakfast, and I didn't leave his house until late on the Saturday night, probably about 16 or 17 hours later. And I'd done a step 4, and I was totally honest, man. I was all the stuff I didn't know. I got up one morning when I was 10, and my dad was lying dead on the bathroom floor. I didn't know I resented that man for dying when I was this wee. 10-year-old. I didn't know I resented my ma for fucking taking us back to her family in Glasgow. I didn't know I resented all his brothers for not the ones that had money, for no fucking making sure I had shoes without holes in the bottom of them on my feet. I didn't know any of that until he sat down with me. He didn't give me papers and tell me to go away and do it. He sat down with me and made sure I'd done it properly. Sat down and explained things when I needed to ask questions. And then he had me back at his house the very next day, and I started my step 5 and back again the next day to finish it. So, you know, I just boom and get right into the stuff. finding out what my defects of character were. You know, because I would have shared my last bag of sweeties with you, or I would have shared fucking my last bag of whatever with you. I would have gave you half of what I had in my pocket. Because I'm not selfish, but oh, there was, I always had a motive, you know. I didn't know that I was, it was all about self. I didn't know any of that sort of a stuff until I went through the work and started to find it all out. And then having a list of all the people that I've got resentments against and harmed and all that in my step eight. And then armed with it all and going out into the world to make amends to people. My ma was an easy one, you know, and I've heard people saying that family are difficult. My ma was an easy one for me. I went and made an amends to my mammy. And she says, oh, it's that Alcoholics Anonymous stuff you're doing, isn't it? No, and I was like, aye, ma, that's what it is. And she saw I was getting better. Made an amends to my son, which was fantastic, and he accepted it, and it's been thrown in my face 100 times since then, but I think that's what happens as well sometimes, isn't it? But that's all right too, you know, because when I came in here in 2018, I was trying to sort him, you know, I was trying to tell him, this is the way you've got to live your life. That's no good what you're doing. And I don't try and do that today. He's nearly 24 and he's all the man he's ever going to be, as they say. And I went and I made amends, and there's quite a lot of names on my list, and there's a lot of amends that I haven't made yet. At some point, God, and who I think is an internal job as well, might put them in my path, and they might know. But there were some amends where I was still holding on to a wee bit of my pride. And one was my best mate. And I share this up in Glasgow as well. He was my best mate. We'd fell out of a drug thing. I wasn't even involved in what we were involved in. He took the huff about it. We never spoke for a couple of years. I didn't get into recovery. And I didn't make the effort to go and see him because I thought he owed me as much in amends as I owed him. And he died anyway before I got a chance to do it, man, and it broke my fucking heart. Because, you know, I'm making an 11 in amends to him. I've spoke to his missus, I've spoke to his kid. But I didn't get a chance to speak to him and just to let him know what I was doing the day, and I wasn't doing the same shite, and I wasn't this selfish person that I was when me and him had fallen out. You know, and the step 10, you know, your inventory at night, you know, and I don't need to do that today because I've done other work as well. You know, see if there's a big thing that I've got that, we were talking about it, so see when it gets to there, right, and you can't swally, then that's when I know that I've got a wee resentment, or I've got a fear, or I've got something that's unsettling me, and I look at what it is, I ask for it to be removed, and then I turn my will out to somebody else, you know, and that's what I do today, and sometimes the big ones I've got to write down, and then I've got to share it with my sponsor. And I think, you know, so see if I'm 3.5 years now. See if I'm still having to write down at the end of every day, I've not got any fears and any harms and any of that sort of a stuff. I'm not sure if I'm doing it right at that point, to be honest. So that's what I do today, you know. Everybody's leaving. I hope they're not all leaving because I'm shite. I'm only joking. Sorry. Aye. So I do what I'm meant to do today, right? And the full prayer and meditation, I'll get on my knees, I'll say a wee couple of prayers. I heard somebody sharing at the Bournemouth one as well about if you're meditating all day, man, who are you fucking helping, you know what I mean? You're no helping the newcomer, you know, and that's what all this stuff's all about. You're no helping the person who's struggling. You know, in saying that, I'm going to be in the 23rd of December for 10 days to meditate for 10 days, and I'll not be helping too many people then either, but you know, I do service. I don't do as much service as what I done when I first came in, because my life has changed a wee bit, and I'm studying now, and I've got a job where I help people and all that sort of a stuff. And it's all because of what I learned in here. I learned that I'm no a rotter. I learned that, and it doesn't matter where it, because is it trauma? Is it genetics? Is it whatever? You know what I mean? I've got a spiritual malady, right? That last Tuesday I'm fantastic, right? Then there's something in the paper on the Tuesday night, and my mood just fucking dips for a week. And the amount of me sharing or helping anybody else or getting on my knees and praying actually takes that away, because that's part of my human condition as well, you know what I mean? But if I do the stuff that I'm taught to do in here, I know that I don't need to lift, drink or drugs on the back end of that. This is my first convention. I don't know if it's been a good convention, although, you know what I mean, but I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. My first convention. I don't know why I've not been to any other conventions. The job I've got now allows me a wee bit more freedom. I was driving a taxi. I don't know if there's any taxi drivers in the house tonight. There you go. So it's been a shite job for long enough, isn't it? You know, and no, it has absolutely, because you've got to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week at least. So with a convention and everybody's enjoying themselves, I wasn't doing any of that, you know. I've came here, I've learned so much, you know, over the last 2.5 days. It's been absolutely fantastic. Learned other people's, you know, because what's in the book isn't it doing the interpretation, you know. What's in the book is in the book. You know, we're meant to follow that with a letter, but I've learned for other people their slant on why they think that they've got the spiritual thing going on. They're anything with a God, you know, God's your own understanding, you know, and I've got a good understanding of my God today. And it's, for me, it's an internal thing. My higher power is my higher power, but it's an internal thing. I can remember getting to the other place and being told, if you want to use that chair as your higher power, use that higher chair. But I don't get that, you know what I mean? I can't get that. Sorry if anybody's got a higher power, it's a chair. But that's your own thing. But listen, I'm up here and I'm drying up a wee bit anyway. And I don't want to just rabble on for the sake of it. My name's James and I'm glad to be here and sober.